Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Ed Sheeran, NetEase and Spotify. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello. I think my voice is deeper this week. Do my voice is
Have
deeper?
You had it deepened.
It sounds deeper. Well, yesterday, as we record this, I spent 3 hours in the morning lecturing about digital dollars.
Yep.
3 hours in the afternoon lecturing about copyright.
Yep.
And then I went to the Artist and Manager Awards and did a lot of talking. So I think my voice is kind of overused.
Oh, well, boo-hoo.
Maybe I should just not speak for this week's edition and that would help me get my voice back.
The conversational element of this show, I think, is what makes it snap.
I think
if it's just me reading out these notes on my own.
I think it's overrated, the conversational bit. Although, if it was just you reading out the notes, we could try that and see if it works. Do you know why we could try that and see if it works?
Well, because anything's possible.
No, because I was recently pitched a new app that will take some text and then turn it into voice, but not like old school Apple text where it's like a real computerized voice. It really has all the intonation. So if it turns out our listeners would tolerate just you reading out the
notes,
right,
that could read out. That
then
could
we could get
podcast.
Rid of you. I wouldn't have to do it, and we could just have
this
machine do it.
I thought this was going to stop me getting replaced by robots, but apparently not.
No. Well, I haven't tested the app out yet.
Okay.
But I've been told that it's very good at making it sound like a human being is actually reading it. Imagine having a human being on the podcast reading stuff out.
I see. It will never happen.
That would be an innovation. Okay, I'm going to try and see if my voice holds up.
Okay, well, as ever, apparently, we're going to be looking back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week, or whenever this show actually goes out. Can we go for Monday? Are we going to try it for Monday this time?
Maybe it'll go out on Monday. Maybe. Whatever we talk about in this podcast definitely happened at some point in recent times. Let's go with that.
Yes, a week when that whole threaten thing happened. Have you been following that story?
Well, so you've been following this in a lot more detail than I have.
I've read so much.
I actually haven't read any of the articles about it. And some of the metal sites have gone really digging deep.
Yeah, I mean,
they?
Metal Sucks have gone really deep into it. Too deep. I mean, I know details about this guy's dad now that I did not need to know.
I have been navigating this story to date, because I'm waiting for you to write up a summary. But to date, I have been following this story based on Facebook comments, which I suspect are based on the headline of the original NME article, rather than them actually knowing what was going on. But this was a fake band with a fake tour, and it turned out that if you have no fans and you put on a tour, then no fans will show up.
Well, exactly what happened is still debatable, I suppose. Well, not. I mean, it seems pretty clear. This guy who records his own music, he does record all the instruments himself, decides he wants to go on tour.
So it's an American guy.
Yes. Claimed to be based in LA. Turns out based 80 miles outside of LA. That's how detailed some people have gone into researching this.
But I think it's fair to mention that he is American, because you might think if he was British, surely there would be one show where at least some friends and family would show up. So he didn't have that on his side either.
No. So basically, he records all this stuff himself. He's put out an album and he decides he wants to go on tour. So he hires a band, goes through all the audition process, the rehearsals process. I mean, one of the band members who was interviewed subsequently said that initially they were told it was a US and Canada tour, and then suddenly they went, oh, actually, no, it's a European tour, which is weird to start with, isn't it?
Oh, instead of the US Canada tour.
Like same time period, but they've just moved the tour to another continent, which, I mean, I'm sure that's just normal.
For a new artist with, I mean, even if he did have an organic fan base as he was seemingly claiming, he's definitely a new artist. So the idea that a new artist based in America would go and tour in Europe first is a bit weird.
It's all very strange. I mean, his Twitter following is not amazing, but it had like 38,000 fans on Facebook. And I think with hindsight, all these session musicians who were hired kind of look back and go, oh, there were some weird things. But they were paid.
They were paid not very well. Right.
They were paid $300, which then like the day that they were heading out, it was like, oh, that's to buy your food with. That's not your wages. But they came over and then basically no one turned up to the shows. Except the support bands. But I mean, the promoters of the shows have been hoodwinked as well, because he'd basically been telling them that you're not selling many tickets for your vendors, but we've, like, direct a fan, we've sold like 180, 200 tickets. And so there's places like the Underworld in Camden. But they turned up, and they're much to the surprise of the venues and the other band members. And I think Jared threatened this guy himself. No one turned up except the support bands. And then some of them watched the band out of sympathy, thinking that, because this guy kept saying, oh, the promoters screwed us over. he's messed up. And so people initially were kind of felt sorry for him. And then this whole thing blew up, which I'm going to write a whole article about this because this.
And by the time this podcast goes
so
out,
detailed.
Even if this podcast goes out on time, that article will be on the website. The 38,000 fans on Facebook. So those were manufactured fans, bought
fans.
Yeah, they
all seem to be in Brazil.
In Brazil. Who wouldn't make the trip to London?
You know, and apparently,
so made up people in Brazil won't come to London.
All the people who had replied to the Facebook events, I think, were in Brazil as well. So it's not ideal, even if they were real.
The best bit, I thought, was that completely DIY artist. Not only does he have his artist website, he'd set up a website for his non-existent label and a website for his non-existent management and a booking agent or PR company or something.
Oh,
and they all
had
their own websites.
Yeah.
We were like,
and a number of music news websites, which I guess pulled in music news from elsewhere and then just had occasional articles about him, which clearly he'd written. There's a whole thing with his Wikipedia page.
You see, when I first came across it, which I think was the enemy story, and somebody showed it me, and so I did scan down it and we were talking about it, but subsequently I've only seen it on social networks. My initial assumption was it was some kind of avant-garde project, and he never intended to have any audience, and he was basically screwing over the venues in some sort of weird satirical thing, which I couldn't quite understand why you would want to do that or where the satire was. But I mean, do we now think he genuinely thought that if he could trick his way into these venues of all this fake online stuff, people would come?
Yeah, I guess. And I assume what he thought was, I'm in Europe rather than the US, where people will assume that this guy's big back in the US. And the band he'd hired were thinking, well, I've never heard of him, but it seems like he's got a following in Europe. That must be why we're going there. And so I assume he just thought people would go, oh, they must be popular, let's go and see them.
And maybe he was thinking...
That's not really what people do.
Venues like... He was playing Underworld in Camden, wasn't he? Yeah. And I suppose that is a venue with a reputation. So maybe he thought people just go to that venue anyway to see whatever's playing. So providing I can trick my way onto the stage, the venue will somehow find me an audience. Anyway, we're not here to talk about this.
No, and I've already gone into too much detail.
Read last week's Beef of the Week, it will be a summary of everything.
Yes.
And if you're then, having read our Beef of the Week, thinking, I would like to spend an entire week reading even more about this.
Oh, you can.
Go and check
the
Metal Sucks website for their in-depth coverage of the whole thing.
But yes, you're right. We're not here to talk about that. We're actually here to discuss Tencent rival NetEase's new $600 million of funding to boost its own music streaming service, and Spotify's new analytics for publishers. But first, you already mentioned that you were off on a jolly at the Artisan Manager Awards last night.
Guest of honour, I would say.
Guest of honour. I don't think I would say that. I don't
would
think
you
they
not?
Would say that.
No, they wouldn't. I can confirm for definite,
but
they wouldn't say
if
that.
If you tell them that, people might believe it and they might come to your shows.
When you get in the venue, they have all the lists of who's sitting on what table.
It's very helpful.
Well, it wasn't that helpful for me because I didn't know which table I was on. Because most of the tables are like it's the Live Nation table or it's the Modest Management table. But I didn't know. I mean, I was on the MMF table because I was there as a guest of the Music Managers Forum, the whole event being co-presented by the MMF and the Featured Artists Coalition. So I assumed I was on the MMF table. Although I didn't know that, and what I definitely didn't know is there were two MMF tables. So I saw the list for the first one, like I'm not on there, and it took me quite a while to find the second one. But the reason I'm saying this is, clearly there was an empty chair on my table, which wasn't then empty actually once I got there, and they just listed it as special guest. So for a moment I thought, oh, am I the special guest? And then I thought, oh no, there's my name in the list. I wanted to be the special guest. But yeah, I went to the Artist and Manager Awards. I don't go to many awards events, partly because I don't get invited, but because they don't want me there. But that's not true. We, both of us, get invited to various awards events, mainly because companies buy tables because they feel they ought to, and then they realise they haven't got enough people to come. So who can we invite? Oh, I don't know, Chris and Andy. But we don't tend to go very often, do we? I don't actually really like awards events. I found them quite tedious. But not this one, I should add.
Oh, you thought this one was good.
This one was brilliant. It was quite long. They're all quite long because lots of people are getting their prizes and they all deserve their prizes. They all deserve their moment on stage. But there's only so much clapping you can do, isn't there? I mean, I'm thinking, in fact, I assume this probably exists.
Is that it? Was that your limit?
I haven't checked.
Clapping.
I think there's a gap in the market for an app on your phone that will clap for you.
That must be a thing.
I haven't searched for it. But towards the end last night, it's like, oh, wouldn't it be great if I could just press a button on my phone and it could do the clapping for me? So I went to the AMAs, the annual awards from the Music Managers Forum and the Featured Artists Coalition. But that's not what this section's about.
No.
It's about something that happened there.
I was trying to get a bit more quickly to saying this isn't just a 10-minute section of Chris bragging that he went to a thing.
The chicken was good. And actually, so was the sticky toffee pudding. So in terms of food, they did well.
Right.
No fish in sight.
Okay.
So I will return.
It's a reference for very, very long-term readers of the See Me Daily.
I have not been back to the Mercury Prize since the year they gave me fish. But they gave me chicken, so I will go back. But we're here to talk about one of the awards in particular and the speech that was given after it had been presented.
Yes, because actually the speech ended up being...
quite newsworthy.
Newsworthy, which is unusual for speeches at award ceremonies.
It is.
They're usually just so boring.
And I would like it to be noted that Chris Cook, journalist, turned on the recording device on his phone as the speech began, anticipating...
I wondered how you got quite so many quotes from it.
Anticipating that it could be a newsworthy speech. Look at me doing some journalism.
You infiltrated the event.
I did.
And then you recorded bits of it.
Exactly. And then I typed it up. That took quite a long time.
It did take you a very long time.
I mean, presumably that app I was talking about earlier could have done that for me. It speaks it, doesn't it? It's the opposite. No, it does the opposite. It doesn't turn...
It could have done this section, which we're making a meal of right now.
I got confused. It turns words into speech, not the other way around. But there are apps that do that, aren't there? I should have used that. But anyway. Yeah, it was a very interesting speech. And actually...
are we going to talk about it?
No. It felt interesting at the time, but as I was typing it up, it was like, oh, actually, this is even more interesting than it felt at the time. This all relates to a story that we've been talking about a lot on Setlist over the last few years, and in particular the last few months.
Yeah. Secondary ticketing, Viagogo, Kilimanjaro Live, Ed Sheeran, Stuart Galbraith.
Yeah.
That's my summary. Right, next story.
Shall I explain?
That's all we've got time for now.
Shall I explain what the award was before we talk about the speech?
If you want.
It was a brand new award at the AMAs, because most of the awards of the evening are like the usual music industry events. Except, obviously, it's biased towards artists and managers.
You're good at stuff.
Well, artist of the year, manager of the year, breakthrough of the year. And then awards call things like entrepreneur and pioneer. So those are the kinds of awards that most of the event is based on. So it's based on projects and releases and careers to date. But this particular award we're talking about tonight, and the reason why it's newsworthy, was linked into the Fanfare campaign, which we've talked about a lot on Setlist, which is the anti-ticket touting campaign that was instigated by a group of artist managers, and the MMF were very involved in getting that campaign up and running and making sure that it achieved what it has achieved. And so it was a brand new award built around the Fanfare campaign, which was basically celebrating Kilimanjaro Live and also DHP Family, we should add, it was a joint winner, who were co-promoters of Ed Sheeran States here in the UK. And it was to celebrate their efforts, which we have talked about on Setlist, to try and crack down on ticket touting. And the artist manager, Brian Message from ATC, presented the award. He was very involved in setting up the Fanfare campaign. And he said that the point of the award was... that Fanfare has achieved quite a lot in the last 2 years. Yep. I mean, we've talked about that, how it really feels when it comes to regulating the resale of tickets online for profit, when it comes to regulating online ticket touting. There have been various points over the last 15 years where that's been a big talking point. But every time previously it was a big talking point, everyone talked about it for a few months and then nothing happened and then it kind of went away.
Yeah.
Well, ticket touting didn't go away, but the talking about it...
The talking
went away. Whereas this time, we've seen new regulations come into force here in the UK, or more importantly, actually, is we've seen the existing regulations that everyone was kind of ignoring properly enforced. And so what Brian Message was saying was these new regulations have appeared. Having said that, for that to actually have a proper impact, it's relying on the live industry to then utilise those regulations to have a big crackdown on touting, particularly for the massive in-demand shows like the Ed Sheeran tour. And so the award was designed to commend both Kilimanjaro and DHP for putting in the effort and the work to utilise those new regulations in order to stop the touting of tickets for that show in such a high-profile way that maybe it would restrict touting in the long term. And so that's what the award was for. So both Kilimanjaro and DHP Family were there, but Stuart Galbraith from Kilimanjaro, who has been very vocal about ticket touting from way before the Fanfare campaign, so a long-term critic of online touting, and he accepted the award, gave a speech in which there were some very interesting stats and some news.
Yes. So, in his speech, according to CMU's Chris Cook,
he's very reliable.
Well, apparently, he was drunk on chicken. Said, last year on the Ed Sheeran tour, we saved the customers in the region of £800,000, not each, in total. And we hurt Viagogo to the extent of nearly £2 million.
So that was a result of the campaign that we've talked about, where they went an above and beyond to identify what tickets had been touted only over Viagogo, because they'd managed to persuade the others, so StubHub and, of course, Seatwave and Get Me In, that were still operational at the time, they persuaded them not to allow tickets to Ed Sheeran shows to be listed. So they were all on Viagogo. And so Kilimanjaro DHP went above and beyond to cancel as many touted tickets as they could. But then the fans who had bought those touted tickets, they weren't just refused entry at the door and told to go away. They were offered a face value ticket so they could get into the shows. So that's how the fans were £800,000 better off, because they were sold a face value ticket rather than the touted ticket with the hiked up price that they'd originally bought. And then the nearly £2 million hit on Viagogo is the fact that all those tickets that had been touted via that platform were cancelled and didn't get the fans into the shows. And of course, because Viagogo loves to talk about its guarantee, if you buy a ticket on Viagogo and it doesn't get you into the show, the Viagogo guarantee guarantees you a refund.
Yes, so then he went on to say, as a result of that, instead of having to cancel 15,000 tickets as we did on the last tour, on the next tour, next week we'll cancel less than 100. We've got the message across, the fans understand, and the touts have decided that they don't want to mess with us. Now, I mean, I don't know if that is true of Viagogo not wanting to mess with them. Viagogo have, I should say, disputed that any tickets at all were cancelled on the last tour, and Kilimanjaro just used psychological tactics to get people to hand over their tickets.
Yes, they had the signs, didn't they, at the shows, victims of Viagogo, and if you joined the queue under that sign, when you got to the counter, they would say, oh, your Viagogo tickets aren't valid, we'll take those off you and we'll sell you some face value tickets instead. But Viagogo argued, actually, those tickets hadn't been cancelled until the point the customer got to the counter, and had they tried to get into the venue with their ticket, actually, they would have got in okay. I think it was a combination of the two. I mean, another interesting stat that Stuart came up with on the night, he thanked an assortment of different people.
Yes.
So the Fanfare campaign, Claire Turnham from the Victim of Viagogo campaign that we have spoken about before on Setlist. The two MPs who have been most vocal about this in Parliament, which is Nigel Adams on the Tory side and Sharon Hodgson on the Labour side. But he also mentioned a guy called Reg Walker, who I don't think we've ever talked about on Setlist, but we have name-checked him and quoted him in the Seeming Daily in the past, who works for a company called Iridium, who provides various services to companies who are trying to crack down on the touts. And Galbraith said that on the Ed Sheeran tour, Reg single-handedly, manually went through 1 million Ed Sheeran ticket sales and identified for us the seven touts who between them had bought 15,000 tickets to Ed shows, enabling us to cancel them. So that's definitely implying, even if there was a little bit of cancelling tickets on the night when people self-admitted that they had bought their ticket from a tout, that a certain chunk of those tickets had indeed been cancelled before the shows began.
So as well as all those people you might expect him to thank, he also had a few other honourable mentions. He thanked Ticketmaster.
He did indeed. And Live Nation.
Good old Ticketmaster, everyone's favourite.
They were in the room. I saw that Live Nation had a table when I was desperately trying to work out what table I was on. So, of course, in amongst all of this campaigning against ticket touting, one of the big developments earlier this year was that Live Nation's Ticketmaster division announced that in Europe, of course, as we subsequently discovered, definitely not in the US for the time being at least, but in Europe, they're shutting down Seatwave and Get Me In, which were the Ticketmaster-owned secondary ticketing sites. And so he said last night, thank you to Ticketmaster for bowing to our relentless pressure, our requests, our incessant nagging you. Thank you for closing your two tout sites. We appreciate it greatly. Now, you might have expected him to say that, because that was a big deal, Ticketmaster shutting down those sites, and everyone involved in the Fanfare campaign were very pleased when that happened. But he also thanked StubHub, who obviously eBay's resale site that's very much still in business. But I suppose he was keen to contrast StubHub, which did comply with Ed Sheeran's wishes to not allow those shows' tickets to be listed on the StubHub site. But he was actually contrasting StubHub with, our old favourite, good old Viagogo.
Yeah, so he said, thanks also, bizarrely, to StubHub, who are more transparent than the one last bad actor that we have in the industry, which is Viagogo. I mean, obviously, we've already discussed that. But he did also sort of thank Viagogo.
He acknowledged
them, didn't he?
He started off by saying no thanks to Viagogo, so I think that's definitely not thanking Viagogo.
He did then thank them for several things.
Of course, the other big development in this whole story in recent months was when Viagogo, after years of issuing no statements to anybody and never replying to any journalists who tried to get in touch, suddenly became very chatty again. And in amongst all of that, they announced they were going to sue Kilimanjaro for the anti-touting campaign that they had instigated on the Ed Sheeran tours here in the UK. We had that weird thing that although it related to the UK tour, because that's the shows that Kilimanjaro and DHP were involved in, they were suing through the German courts, I think because Kilimanjaro ultimately has a parent company which is based in Germany called DEAG. So yeah, in the wrap-up of Stuart's speech, he acknowledged Viagogo's attempts to sue his business.
Yeah, he said, "Thank you for threatening to sue us. Thank you for not following it through. Thank you for not suing us in Germany. Thank you for not suing us in Austria."
So there was the thanks to Viagogo. And then I suppose the final thank you was he thanked DEAG, this parent company in Germany. Because I think when Viagogo announced it was going to sue in Germany, obviously DEAG is based in Germany, has shareholders in Germany. There was a little bit of a controversy around that. But he was saying our parent company stood by us. And then what was his conclusion? They stood by us to allow us to stand up for what we believe is right.
Yes. And I mean, also in that list of thanks to Viagogo, that seemingly confirmed that Viagogo's legal action never came to anything.
That seemed to be the suggestion.
Which is kind of what we expected.
Yeah, it's not surprising, although we didn't actually know that, did we? So the last we heard about this, I think it was in September when they announced this lawsuit was going to happen. Kilimanjaro did then put out a response and then it all went very quiet. So
yes, I mean, in subsequent statements from Viagogo, they've mentioned the legal action, but they did send us a statement in response to your article on that, and they did not mention the legal action at all, which, I mean, the fact that it was brought up in the article would suggest that they're not talking about that anymore.
Yes, once we had written up the speech and published it in the See Me Daily, yeah, you're right, Viagogo did get in touch and gave us, well, basically, they cut and pasted the classic statement. This is now the thing that Viagogo put out whenever something like this comes up, which is to insist that tickets sold on Viagogo's platform are genuine tickets that have been sold on by the original ticket purchaser in good faith. Event organisers sometimes make claims that they will deny entry to people who have purchased resold tickets. These types of entry restrictions are highly unfair and, in our view, unenforceable and illegal. Although, as we have said before on Setlist, there is a line in the Consumer Rights Act that explicitly says that you can do that,
yes,
providing it's in the terms and conditions of the ticket.
So enforceable and legal.
Although, I mean, in the current context, does anything that happens in Parliament matter anymore? The entire system of our democracy seems to be falling apart as we record this podcast. But technically, there is an Act of Parliament, which I'm pretty sure any judge would say actually makes cancelling those tickets entirely legal, but Viagogo disagrees, and it goes on to say, "Therefore, as with all tickets on our platform, Viagogo customers should feel confident that they will get an entry to the event, and that is why we back every ticket with a Viagogo guarantee," they say.
And there's that guarantee again. I mean, that's, as you say, that's basically what they say all the time.
It is now. Well, you say all the time. I mean, until 3 months ago, they said nothing.
Yeah.
But since they became...
It's become a thing they say all the time.
Since they became chatty again.
It used to be in the FAQ on their website, didn't it?
Did it. Since they become chatty again, they do tend to chat the same thing every time, which is that statement saying, "We don't think that promoters are allowed to cancel our tickets," even though they do 99.9% certain that they can under UK law. But nevertheless, that guarantee that you will get your money back is still there. Although Claire Turnham from the aforementioned victim of Viagogo campaign would probably add the footnote, "Yes, you can get your money back, providing you're willing to work for your refund," because it doesn't always necessarily come back on first request.
Still to come, Spotify's new publisher analytics and expansion into the Middle East. But now, as Tencent, operator of the biggest streaming service in China, prepares to IPO, or doesn't, perhaps, its music division, a key rival in the Chinese streaming music market, has completed a new funding round of $600 million, that rival being NetEase Cloud Music.
Now, I am sure that every single listener of the Setlist podcast joined us at the China conference at the Great Escape that we presented back in May.
Are you sure of that?
Actually, I'm sure that they didn't, because we have a lot more people listening to this podcast than we had in the room. We had quite a lot of people in the room, But if everybody who listens
to this podcast... Yeah, you made that sound like it was poorly attended. What you mean is more people listen to this than could fit in that room.
Correct.
Just be clear about that.
If you'd all come, you wouldn't have got in. So well done. Those of you who didn't come, well done for not coming to our China conference because you wouldn't have got in. And those of you who did, you can tune out because everything I'm about to say, we said on stage at the China conference at the Great
Escape. It'll be a good refresher. Stay tuned in.
It will be a good refresher. Maybe skip ahead.
That's not good program hosting to say tune out. Stay tuned right in.
Skip ahead 5 minutes.
I listened to Mr. Jam on Radio 1 the other day.
Did you?
And he said, keep it where you've got it. A lot.
Keep it where you got it.
We should probably say that like every 2 minutes. Say, keep it where you got it.
Lock it in. It's what they used to say on the radio in the 90s. Lock it in.
Keep it where you got it.
And rip the knob off. That was what...
That's a bit violent.
I think that was what Piccadilly Key 103 said in the 90s.
Well, no wonder they're not going anymore.
Or maybe it was MFM. Anyway, you've taken us on quite a big tangent here. I can't even remember how we got into it. I know what I was going to say.
Good, I'm glad.
If you were at the China Conference at the Great Escape, maybe tune ahead 5 minutes in the podcast because there'll be a plug for something. And that's the best bit, isn't it? So you're welcome to skip ahead to the plug that always appears.
Stick with us.
But China is a country. There we go. That's a starting point. That was the big finding of our China conference. We confirmed. It's definitely a country.
Yeah.
And not only that, China is now the 10th biggest recorded music market in the world.
Wow.
Working its way up the charts of bringing in money for the record industry worldwide. And all of that really is down to the streaming boom. And the fact that we have these streaming services emerging, signing up millions and millions and millions and millions of people, because there's a lot of people in China. And
there are a few, aren't there?
Starting to hand over initially big advances, but slowly but surely actually proper royalty payments, obviously to the local music industry especially, but also to the global music industry as well. And there are a number of different services available in China. It's generally locally based services that are gaining the traction rather than the global services. I mean, most of the global services aren't there, but Tencent's QQ Music is by far the biggest. Tencent has a couple of other services as well, but QQ is the main Tencent-owned service, Tencent being one of the Chinese web giants. This whole section is going to be full of Chinese web giants. When I was writing this story, I realized every sentence it was like, this Chinese web giant, because there's a lot of Chinese web giants, one of which is Tencent, who own QQ Music. And then probably the second biggest player in the market is NetEase Cloud Music. So NetEase is another Chinese web giant that have a music service called Cloud Music. And then I think probably the third in the market is probably Alibaba, another Chinese web giant that has a music service. Although Alibaba is quite a lot smaller, I think, than the other two. And obviously, we've been talking quite a lot about Tencent and QQ in the CME Daily in recent months because of that IPO that you referenced.
Yes.
So Tencent's already a publicly listed company, but their plan is to spin off music as its own thing. So that would include the QQ Music service, but also some other stuff. So for example, they've got a distribution side and they're building a label side. And Tencent Music will become a standalone business listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Yes.
Interestingly. So the paperwork's already been filed for that, although we don't actually know when the IPO is going to be happening.
No, because the IPO has been a bit delayed.
It was already, apparently, being slowed down. We knew this because of a report in the Wall Street Journal, because as I think we discussed last week when we were talking about Spotify's share price having a good old wobble, the tech sector in the main, the share prices of most tech companies have not been very well of late. So the entire tech sector stocks are sort of slipping. And so the rumor was that Tencent were like, this probably isn't the best time to be listing on the New York Stock Exchange. Maybe we'll push it back a few months. But then, of course, last week's news was that the second player in the market, NetEase Cloud Music, had raised a whole lot of extra cash from other investors, which we assume they will be using to quite aggressively take on QQ and try, well, who knows, become the biggest service in that country.
We should probably say it's NetEase, like easy internet. Not, it doesn't belong to someone called Netty.
Is that what you're hearing?
Me, it's what I hear
every time I say NetEase Music. Now you've said it. That's never occurred to me before. And now you've said it, I can't hear it any other way than NetEase Cloud Music. Yeah, who's Netty? And why has she put all of her music in the cloud?
Well, that's what everyone's doing.
That's going to ruin it for me now. We'll have to be really specific in saying NetEase.
Well, they don't put a space in it, so it is NetEase.
Put a glottal stop in the middle. So yeah, NetEase has raised this 600 million.
Still sounds like NetEase. Sorry. How much?
How much has Netty managed to get in from handing a little dish around the WI meeting last week? 600 million.
Wow.
Is how much NetEase ease, Cloud Music now has to spend to further grow its service and market its service and so on and so forth. But actually, what I thought was most interesting about this isn't so much that that's quite a lot of money, and isn't so much that it's NetEase more prolifically taking on Tencent and QQ, and not the idle speculation that we're going to come to in a moment about whether or not this could further delay the IPO of Tencent Music. It's more that one of the investors putting in some of that $600 million is Baidu.
Chinese web giant.
Yeah, Chinese web giant, yep. Baidu are one of the people putting some of this $600 million in. And the reason why that is interesting is if we look back at the story of digital music in China, and if you came to that China conference, you would know this because we told the story. But there was a period when Baidu, who are kind of the Google of China because they're best known for their search engine, and there was a period of a number of years where Baidu was almost, if not actually, enemy number one of the global music industry.
I remember it
because
well.
Because Baidu had a separate MP3 search engine where you could put in the name of an artist or a song and it would search the internet for that track as an MP3 file, and obviously would then link you through to lots and lots and lots of unlicensed sources of those tracks.
That's kind of frowned upon, isn't it?
It isn't a preferred way of doing business when it comes to the record companies and music publishers. And the Baidu MP3 search service became huge in China. It was a really big deal. And so the global music industry, and indeed the local music industry, were trying to stop that and trying to sue Baidu and put pressure onto Baidu and so on and so forth. And eventually, after years of moaning and campaigning and going legal, the music industry, the global music industry, did a deal with Baidu, and they kind of settled past grievances, and Baidu pledged to stop facilitating the infringement of copyright by helping people find illegal MP3s on the internet. And as part of that deal, as was often the case with those sorts of deals, Baidu also then formed a relationship with the music industry with a bid to launching a legitimate, licensed music service. And you sense that Baidu's hope was, okay, we're going to have to shut down this very popular MP3 search service, but we now have the relationship with the global music industry. We can now capitalize on that, launch a legal streaming service, because it feels that the market is getting to the point here in China where a legal, licensed, revenue-generating digital music sector could emerge. We have the reputation and the audience in that space, and we will dominate this new, soon-to-launch, soon-to-grow, legitimate digital music market here in China, and it will all be ours.
Yeah, but we're not talking about Baidu Music, or whatever their service was called, floating on the New York Stock Exchange, are we?
No, they almost immediately then lost that battle to Tencent, who came out of nowhere and marched on, did their exclusivity deals with the major record companies, became the distributors of the majors in that market. And Tencent then came to dominate the digital music market and the emerging streaming market with their QQ brand in particular. So it's interesting to see Baidu, who was an early brand in digital music in China and then kind of fell out of the conversation, now allying with Tencent's main competitor, yeah, NetEase, and putting some money into NetEase Cloud Music. And presumably part of their ambition is to try and regain some of that digital music market, albeit through a partnership with another of their competitors.
And then that makes it all the more interesting that people are now speculating. There's the idle speculation you were referring to.
Yeah, earlier. Here comes the idle speculation, people.
People are speculating that this cash boost for NetEase Cloud Music might delay Tencent Music's IPO even further.
So that was speculation on various sort of tech and investment sites last week once this NetEase financing round had been announced, and they were saying, okay, Tencent already seemed to have slowed down their march to the New York Stock Exchange because the tech sector at large stocks are kind of wobbling at the moment. But could this make potential investors slightly less excited about the opportunity to become part of Tencent Music, because we now seem to have what has often been positioned as being very much a smaller second player in the market, raising all this money, forming some alliances, and maybe going to try and take on Tencent and become as big and maybe even bigger. This is idle speculation. Whether or not it will make any difference, I don't know. I mean, it's still certainly true that Tencent is a hugely significant company in China, and its music service is an incredibly significant music service. So I think even if NetEase Cloud Music does start to catch up, it will still be a very significant player. And because the Chinese market is so big in terms of population, even if the average subscriber is either on a free service, as most of them are, and so you're making money from advertising or other things that you upsell, or you're charging them a subscription, but in the context of Europe and North America, it's a relatively nominal subscription. But nevertheless, there are so many people there, there's a huge pot of money to be grabbed, so that the market could quite easily sustain two major players. So I don't know if it will have that big an impact on interest in the Tencent Music IPO, but it was interesting to read up on that speculation in the wake of NetEase. Well done to NetEase
for NetEase.
Getting that 600 million cash boost.
I mean, that sounds about 600 million sounds like a lot of money, but, well, as we know, you need a lot of money to get a streaming service off the ground. And in a country like China, where there are a lot of people, that money might not go as far as perhaps in another country.
Tencent, of course, has an alliance with Spotify, which I'm not meant to be mentioning in this section because we've got a whole third section coming up where we're going to talk about Spotify.
Yeah.
But Tencent did a equity exchange with Spotify. So Spotify has some equity in Tencent Music. Tencent has some equity in Spotify. And I mean, it has been suggested in the past that maybe the final chapter of Spotify's story of a business is at some point in the future, Tencent buys it and Spotify becomes sort of the global service of Tencent Music. So there is a little bit of a Spotify dimension whenever Tencent's on the table as well.
Yes, but for now, we just wait for NetEase's next move.
Yeah.
Well, before we get to our last story this week, which you've already teased there.
Always the professional.
Very good.
Occasionally telling people to stop listening, but occasionally encouraging people to stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Right, keep it where you got it right now.
Lock it in.
Have you got anything to plug?
I do have a quick thing to plug.
Okay, you plug something really quickly.
Because, and this is big news.
Oh, yeah.
Big, big news.
Yep.
CMU's Chris Cook has been locked in for a major UK music conference. And you might think that that's me over-egging my role in something again, like suggesting I was a guest of honour at the Artist and Manager Awards.
Yep.
But that is actually what the press release says.
Yes.
We should note that the person doing the PR on this event is...
They've rewritten the press release specifically for you, haven't they?
It's having a bit of a joke
by
emailing a different version of the press release. I assume, assuming that... By putting me in the headline, I will then be more likely to write about the event. And I have to say, I probably am. You will see him. Look back at Friday's CMU Daily and see if this ruse worked. Do I give the ultimate seminar a full story in the CMU Daily rather than a one-liner name check? Because the PR very cleverly put me at the top of the press release. I'm not meant to be at the top of the press release, actually.
No, you're definitely not.
I'm not even really meant to be in the press release. It's the other speakers who are speaking at this event. So Ultimate Seminar is an event that takes place every year.
It's the Ultimate Seminar,
it is
it?
The Ultimate Seminar. So it takes place every year. It has been going for a very long time. So it's a big full day aimed at sort of early career artists, young talent. And it normally takes place in a lecture hall in central London. The room is always rammed. Lots of early career artists who are always very motivated. They always have loads of questions. And so today is a combination of panels and interviews and speeches, as you would expect.
It's more than one seminar, isn't it?
It is a whole day of, well, it depends how you define a seminar. Are you suggesting a seminar can only be one thing? It can't be a whole day.
Yes.
So you would like it to be called the Ultimate Seminars.
The Ultimate Series of Events.
There's a reason why you're not involved in marketing events like this, clearly. So there's various panels, various interviews, various Q&As during the day. I am there. So it is true, actually, that I have been locked in for this event. It's just that I'm not
really... Well, you've got other things to do first, though. Why have they locked you in?
Headline billing. But I will be there. Actually, I think I'm on the first panel of the day, which is kind of a big overview panel. But amongst the other people who are speaking during the day this year is Jamie Binns from Lateral Management, who, amongst other things, manages Paloma Faith. Also, Camille Purcell, who has written songs for the likes of Rihanna, Little Mix, and Clean Bandit. You'll also hear from senior executives from RCA, from Virgin EMI, and various other singers and songwriters and managers and music industry people. And did I mention CMU's Chris Cook is going to be there?
I think you might have mentioned him once.
For the first panel of the day. So the Ultimate Seminar, it's taking place this year on Saturday, the 24th of November from 9:30 through to 7 p.m. at the University of Westminster's Central London base. Admission is free.
Wow!
You do not have to pay to come to this event. You need to go and register. And if you go to the set list notes, as always, Andy Malt over there. I'm pointing at him.
Yeah.
You can't see that, but
he
am.
He is, I can confirm it.
Andy Malt over there. Andy Malt, I'm doing it's my Victoria Beckham impression.
Oh, no.
Andy Malt.
He's still doing it.
Over there. Oh. We'll put a link to where you can sign up to attend the Ultimate Seminar 2018.
I sure will. Setlistpodcast.com. There'll be a link in there. There'll be links to all the stuff we've discussed this week. Go there, find out where to register. And finally, this week, in something of an emerging trend, Spotify has put yet another new industry-facing service into beta.
It does feel at the moment that every couple of weeks, Spotify is announcing some new widget for music industry people.
They have got a lot of stuff in development.
They do, even though Daniel Ek, in the most recent Spotify quarterly report, said that they hadn't managed to hire enough people to do research and development. How much research and development do you want, Daniel Ek? You've already had the playlist pitching tool. You've already had the direct upload tool. Now we've got analytics for publishers and songwriters and all of that stuff.
I mean, do publishers and songwriters need analytics?
Well, do we need any of this stuff? Do we even need to have streaming music? I'm not sure that we do.
No, maybe we don't. Well, that's decided then. End of podcast. Shut it all down. Oh, this podcast, you can stream this, can't you?
Yeah.
On Spotify.
Oh, on Spotify. They should just do podcasts. Hey, do you know who does need decent analytics from Spotify and playlisting support? Us podcasters.
That's true.
Screw the music publishers.
There's none.
What about us with our bloody podcast? I'd like to know who's been listening to this. Anyway, so Spotify Publishing Analytics.
Yeah, I suppose we could talk about that.
Which is the thing they've actually launched rather than the thing that they possibly could launch.
I would prefer to talk about the podcasting analytics.
Well, by the time
playlisting. If I could stick that in our weekly playlist that we do, that would make that playlist more useful to us.
By the time this podcast goes out, they probably would have launched that, given that they keep launching new things. But the big innovation in the last week or so, actually the last 10 days really, was this launch of a new thing called Spotify Publishing Analytics. Mm-hmm. So this is a new portal. It's in beta. All these things are in beta, which will be providing various different stats aimed at, well, publishers, basically. I mean, presumably, well, yeah. Self-published songwriters may also be able to access it. I don't know. But it's aiming at the publishing sector. And obviously, on the recording side of the business, these days, there are so many stats and so much data coming through. And if you are a label, then Spotify is pumping stats at you all the time about how often your music has been streamed, the demographics of those people, where they live, what playlists your music is on, what playlists you've been added to, whether or not people are skipping your tracks. All of that data is being pushed out towards labels all the time. Although in most cases, actually, independent labels are relying on a distributor that sits between them and Spotify to do something with that data, to present it to them in a useful format. Meanwhile, artists, recording artists, have the whole Spotify for Artists platform where they can get all of that data, but a decent chunk of that data is available to artists and their managers directly. But this new platform is being skewed towards those on the publishing side. And I suppose it's interesting on the publishing side that although the big five publishers, so that's what, Sony, Universal, Warner, BMG and Cobalt, have direct relationships with Spotify for their Anglo-American repertoire. And we are now starting to see an increasing number of independents also having direct relationships with Spotify for their Anglo-American repertoire. An awful lot of people in the publishing space actually have a collecting society sitting between them and Spotify and all of the streaming services. So they don't have a direct relationship with the streaming platforms, which means that although they're probably getting some data from their collecting society, it's not super up-to-date, user-friendly usage data like what the labels are getting and the artists are getting through Spotify for Artists. So in the main, the publishing side of the business has not had access to the same kind of data. The big five who have the direct relationships, they've been building their own portals. Obviously, the Cobalt portal for a while was the one that everyone talked about and what it did with streaming data. But many of the other publishers have built their own portals likewise. But for smaller independents, particularly those who have a collecting society between them and the service, they're probably not seeing the data that everyone else is. And so this is Spotify's attempt to allow those people to get some kind of usage data about the performance of the songs and the songwriters that they control and or work with on the Spotify platform.
And it's increasingly the songwriters and publishers who are moaning the loudest about streaming. They've sort of placated the artists and labels somewhat.
Yeah, if you wanted to be a little bit cynical.
Which I obviously do.
You want to be a little bit cynical. Obviously, Spotify for Artists has been going for quite some time now. As an initiative, there's various strands to it, but the data and the analytics is a big part of Spotify for Artists. And when Spotify first started investing in its division that reached out to artists and especially managers directly and started providing those people with services and then subsequently with data, in some ways that began with the Tom Yorks and Taylor Swifts and Adeles of this world bad-mouthing either streaming in general or Spotify in particular. And I think Spotify identified this problem that because originally they only really had relationships with the record companies on the recording side and the collecting societies on the publishing side and maybe the big five on Anglo-American repertoire, they didn't actually have direct relationships with artists. And I think sometimes Spotify felt when artists were out in the press bad-mouthing streaming in general or Spotify in particular, a bunch of the issues that they were raising actually weren't Spotify's fault. They were issues with the way the record companies or music distributors work or report. And so it was an attempt to reach out directly to the artist community, mainly via management, to say, look, we're going to give you all these tools, we're going to give you all this data, and hopefully through that, you might see that while you may still have some issues with us as a company, actually probably more of your issues are with your record company and your distributor. So that was what happened with Spotify for Artists. And as you say, you kind of feel there's still some old timers who like to diss streaming from time to time, but generally younger, more active artists are now fully on board with the streaming thing. Whereas it is, yeah, the songwriters, and mainly the songwriters who are not also recording artists in their own right, who have been most critical about Spotify and streaming in general in recent years.
Yeah, would you like to know what Spotify's head of publishing relations and services for EMEA and APAC said? I mean, that's a very long job title.
It is a very long job title. Next time I see Jules Parker, who is that person,
yes,
I want to see his business card.
I haven't seen Jules Parker for a very long time.
I saw him at Reaper Bomb.
Did you?
But he did not give me a card for me to check what point size they have to use to fit that job title. Or perhaps he just has really big... I don't know if he had a bag with him. Perhaps he has like A5 or A4 size business cards.
Just
to fit that.
Out.
Remind us of the job title.
The head of publishing relations and services for EMEA and APAC.
Okay.
What's APAC?
That will be, I suspect,
Asia Pacific.
And... what could the C be? China?
Well, confusingly, apparently it's Asia Pacific and Japan.
Well, it can't be China because Spotify aren't live in China, as we discussed, because they have a relationship with Tencent in China. So why does the C stand for Japan?
I don't know. I think we've got bogged down in this for too long.
To be fair, that's not Spotify's acronym. That is a generally accepted acronym. Yeah. It is the sort of Asia Pacific version of EMEA, which obviously is very common for Europe, Middle East and Africa. Yeah, that wasn't what we were
meant to
be. No, I was
going to say what Jules said.
Dissecting.
Do you know what Jules said? Well, said something a lot shorter than this.
I've got quite distracted now about how APAC can possibly stand for Asia Pacific.
Let's do a whole
Japan.
Section on it next week.
And Japan is in Asia Pacific, so why is that relevant? Hey, what did Jules say?
One of our core missions at Spotify is to enable creators the opportunity to live off their art. The publishing community is integral in supporting the songwriters that create the music we love. He said some more. Do you want to know
more? Yeah, what else did he say?
With more information, publishers are empowered to make the most of the opportunities the global reach of Spotify provides. And the more information we can share with each other, the more opportunities we can help create for songwriters.
Now, if you're an independent publisher...
Which I'm not.
But if you are...
I'm not.
Well, our listeners might be.
Yeah, but I'm not.
I'm not saying that you are.
Okay.
Why don't you pretend... just for a moment.
Okay.
Be an independent music publisher.
I'm an independent music publisher.
If you're
this
an independent...
fun. I'm enjoying it already.
Well, you just sit around all day and moan. That's what independent music publishers do. That's not true. There are fantastic independent music publishers out there.
We'll do other stuff.
Who will be tuning in.
Or tuning out. Keep it where you got it.
Go back and listen to the plug again. That's what I would do. Don't listen to this bit. Imagine you're an independent...
This has just gone off. I'm not sure we ever got back on the rails from the intro.
Independent music. Public. Are you still pretending?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You might be thinking, this is
read
another...
Read my mind, because I'm an independent publisher.
Another streaming service coming along, thinking that they know what we need.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Forcing a load of unnecessary data upon us.
Yeah.
But you would be wrong.
Mm?
And the reason you would be wrong...
Yeah, tell me.
...is because, and this is also Jules speaking.
Yep.
We developed this platform in close collaboration with a range of publishers to offer value to all of the roles that publishers play. So not just sitting on your arse and moaning, but all the other things that independent music publishers do, like A&R and administration. Spotify Publishing Analytics will give publishers daily streaming statistics for the works and recordings they have identified, including playlist performance, as well as the ability to view data for each of the songwriters on their roster. And in the press release, there were quotes from both BMG and Reservoir Music Publishing to confirm that that is true. But, I mean, who can be bothered reading all those quotes? We didn't put it in our report, so I'm definitely going to read them on the set list. But, Spotify Publishing Analytics, despite what you might think, we are big supporters of the independent music publishing sector, and we're glad that Spotify...
We have actually made it sound like we're not. Independent publishers are brilliant.
But the good ones are going to be even gooder now that they have access to Spotify Publishing Analytics.
And do you know why this is a good time?
Why is this a good time?
There was more to that sentence. I mean, it's a good time because we're nearly finished and this podcast has collapsed.
It has.
But this is a good time for this data to be available to independent publishers and just data in general to be available to everyone because Spotify has launched in like loads of new countries.
Although mainly in the Middle East and North Africa, where I think song rights are almost unenforceable at the moment. But nevertheless...
I know, but you can look at the data.
It's very exciting. Oh,
there's money we're not earning.
And let's not forget that Jules' title includes EMEA,
yep.
Middle East and Africa.
Yep.
That's just an incredibly big region. What is
Europe,
left?
Europe, Middle East and Africa.
I mean, I suppose not the Americas.
And not APAC.
Well, no, but he's got APAC as well.
Well, yeah.
So with EMEA and APAC, all that's pretty much left.
Australasia.
Australasia. Unless that's in APAC.
Could be.
We need to... get on top of these acronyms. But it is true that the other...
If only there was a tool for researching stuff before you talk.
It's called Baidu, isn't it? That Chinese web giant.
That's where I get all my MP3.
That's where you get all your MP3s from. The other bit of Spotify news in the last 7 days, which is what Andy is trying to force into this section, even though it's kind of unnecessary, is that Spotify went live, finally, because this had been rumoured for quite a while, in various Middle East and North African markets last week, including Jordan.
Mm.
The reason I note that is I kind of think they timed this to screw me over because Marcus from CMU Insights, actually, by the time this podcast goes out, will have already presented a number of seminars at an event on the music business and artist management in Jordan. So that's quite exciting. But I'd already done my slides and then Spotify launches. So I had to redo my slides to have Spotify as a service.
Not your slides, Marcus's slides.
Well, the slides that Marcus's was presenting, they are CMU slides. It's a collaboration of our knowledge and intelligence, or something like that.
Which I'm not sure we've showed at all.
Well, the event will already happen by the time this podcast goes out, so we're not going to lose any attendees because of this. So, yeah, I think they timed it just to make me have to redo a slide quite last minute. But, yeah, things happened in the world of Spotify this week.
You built that up. Doesn't sound that bad. Now you've said it. You had to redo a slide after you said they'd screwed you over.
Well, I've been very busy this week.
I know, one slide.
Do without having to rewrite a slide for an event that's happening this week or as you listen to this podcast last week. So, yeah, to conclude, Spotify stuff happened.
Yes, and it now means that Spotify is live in 78 markets. Which means we should really update our spreadsheet. Do you remember we had that spreadsheet? It showed every country that Spotify was in and then the population of all those countries and then it added them up so that we could look at it and go, well, they're missing out on all those people.
Well, that was when everyone got very excited that Spotify had like 10 million paying users, like it was like the biggest thing ever. And it was kind of saying, well, to put that in perspective, the total population of all the countries they're in is like a billion or something. But now they actually have genuinely impressive subscriber figures, both paid for and even more so when you add in the free subscribers. So I'm not sure we need to have that spreadsheet to downplay their achievements anymore. No. But it'll be somewhere on my laptop. I can dig it out if that would make you happy.
I think it's in our shared Dropbox folder.
Is it?
I could update it.
You could update it yourself.
Now you've poo-pooed it. Not going to bother.
Make sure, whatever you do, that all of the APAC countries that Spotify is live in are also listed.
Yes. That's the end of the show. That's enough, isn't it?
I think it's more than enough.
I'd normally tell you to do something. Tell your friends, maybe. I don't know if you should tell them about this episode. Maybe it won't seem quite so chaotic in the edit. I think it probably will. Tell your friends anyway and get them to listen next week. And email us, tweet us. All of that stuff. I'm not going to tell you where to find it. You should know by now. You're not going to email anyway. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook. It's produced by Matt Peaty. Edited, somehow, by Jason Wolfe. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, Setlist is an unlimited production.